Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanaij. My guest today is Dr. Carrie Ditzel. She is a clinical psychologist and the clinical manager of the Gerald Psychology Program at Baker Street Behavioral Health. Dr. Ditzel, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. I was interested in talking to you today about some of the mental health, behavioral health effects on seniors from the COVID pandemic and it's waxing and waning. And the discussion is actually particularly relevant for our viewers. We're talking on June 1st. There was a story, there have been media reports this morning, most prominently in the New York Times, I think, about some of the physical effects of the Omicron wave on senior citizens. We learned that fatality rates were higher. So this discussion is particularly relevant now. First of all, I'd like to start by getting your view on what some of the most common issues you encountered were. I mean, I know from some of the older people that I know, there was a lot of fear about the physical effects of getting COVID. And then there was the problem of isolation. Were those the main things that you were seeing, or are there some things that that weren't immediately obvious to those of us on the outside?
You know, I think you nailed the two big ones, right? Just the fear that we all felt, but it was really elevated and escalated for older adults, because in the beginning, especially, they were more at risk for severe illness is, right, you know, what we were told and what was the truth. You know, additionally, the media was showing people in long-term care facilities and people in hospitals, and it was about older adults, older adults, older adults. So that fear, you know, then led to what we all did, but maybe even more intensely, is that isolation and the shutdown and all of that, which was necessary and all of that, you know, for everybody's well-being. But I think older adults felt it more intensely in some ways. I kind of equate it similarly to how we see it with our kids. You know, they had an extreme shutdown with school and social situations. Well, the people in our families on the other end of the spectrum did as well. Right. Those of us that lived in the middle, we might have still worked. We were remote. We were connecting in other ways because we had obligations. Whereas older adults may not have had those same openings, opportunities. People may not have needed or did reach out, you know, those kinds of things. So I think the isolation was more intense. The fear was probably more intense for many individuals. I think the other thing that did happen with some older adults, not all, but some older adults, is any physical or cognitive issues that they may have been dealing with didn't get addressed as aggressively, or they may have declined in some ways because they weren't going out. You're only dealing with things you absolutely had to deal with. So I think that might be something that we're seeing now as people come back out and are engaging with their older adults. They may notice some physical health conditions or cognitive conditions that may have progressed during that period of time.
Okay. Well, I want to get to that in a bit, but first you raise an interesting point, and that is about, and this goes across disciplines, where patients, even not necessarily older people, but just people in general, didn't follow through on some of the ordinary things that they would ordinarily do in the course of taking care of their health. That must have been particularly acute, especially among older people, especially since, from my just again anecdotally, the need to stay isolated, they felt very strongly that they could not go out anywhere and be in touch with anybody. That must have created, in itself, must have created some problems.
For sure. And when you think about it, this group of individuals, to speak generally, is more vulnerable to the impact of that, right? If I am of middle age and of fairly good health and I have some issue I don't deal with, okay, I can, you know, let it go for a few months, but somebody that has more vulnerabilities, those few months may have been really impactful. Right. I think the other thing that's really important to talk about now too is what I am seeing and what from the mental health perspective is so important is to differentiate now depression and mental health issues from those physical and cognitive issues, because they can look very similar. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to have a bias to just saying it's a medical or cognitive issue, or they've lost it a little bit, you know, when those same things that manifest for in a physical way are signs of depression or anxiety in our older adults. And that, just like medical issues, can be treated. That's my passion, really, is seeing that difference. So I think that's also a really important distinction and complicating the issue right now.
Okay. And you mentioned that folks are starting to get out a little bit more. I'm curious as to whether You saw changes as the waves came and went. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a sort of a sine wave curve to this thing where back in the spring of 2020, everybody was staying home and was frightened. Then the vaccines came, things seemed to get a little bit better. Did the problems change, and did that sort of coming and going and waxing and waning of danger, for lack of a better word, that must have, you know, people must have felt like they were on a yo-yo at that point.
Because I know I did, so. Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think it's any different for any one of us. It's confusing. It's a lot of what they call decision fatigue. Do I or don't I? Do we get together? Don't we together? Do we take the risk? Don't we take the risk? I think that's true of everybody. So I don't think older adults were different in that sense. If anything, anecdotally, I'll say some of the older adults in my life showed, I think, the grit and resiliency that maybe came with experiences they've had in their life where they said, okay, listen, we're doing the best we can. We have a vaccine. I'm living my life. Right. Okay. And I'm going. Now, that's not everybody's attitude, but I saw that myself personally with some of the people in my life. And I think there was something to be said for that, you know, like, hey, we're doing the best we can. We're not going to pause time anymore. My time is precious. I'm going to go out and live now. Right. So okay. I personally learned that from that experience.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess if you lived through the Depression and World War and Cold War, what's a germ here or there?
Right. Well, I mean, when you think about it too, I think some older adults said, you know, enough is enough. I've lost enough time. I'm going forward and I'm going to take my chances. Again, that's an anecdote, but I think there's something to be said from that generation learning from that.
Yeah. I wonder though, if that itself raises a concern about people needing to sort of show that kind of resilience, if the expectation is, well, you know, just suck it up. I mean, you've been through a lot in your life, you know, don't worry so much.
Yeah. I think this pandemic, it was taxing to all of us in ways that we've never been taxed before. So I think we need to be conscientious of that and give all of us grace that maybe we were coping fine. We dealt with stress before the pandemic in certain ways. We had our systems in place, our supports, our hobbies, the things we liked that got us through. The chronic stress of the pandemic, the ups and the downs, like you were talking about, really has made some individuals, older adults and young adults, children, teens, everybody, just so much more stressed that now we're seeing some pathology. We're seeing depression, anxiety, things that might be more diagnosable. Whereas if that chronic stress didn't happen, maybe it wouldn't have, but it's okay. Let's acknowledge what happened. We can move forward. We can treat it and we can recover from it. And that's, I think, the important message is honoring however you feel. If you really struggled, fine. Now get help. If you're not able to engage back in life effectively, that's a sign, right? If you're moving along and sucking it up and doing just fine, great. But not everybody's going to be like that, and that's okay.
Okay. Now, another sort of effect that I've spoken to some of your colleagues about was the increase in substance abuse. I'm curious. I mean, I don't think folks may not immediately think of older people when they think of substance abuse, but I'm imagining, you know, when you have a lot of prescriptions, for example, for painkillers and things like that around, that might have been a temptation. Did you see any increase in substance abuse among the folks you were seeing?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a risk. I think you looking at it holistically, if you were at risk for substance use before, then just because you're an older adult doesn't make you any less, you know, or make you any more. It's more about you personally. Right. So if you think about older adults, you know, they're having a glass of wine once a night, you know, or a beer for enjoyment, just like the rest of us. And maybe during the pandemic, their stress level caused more. So I think it's definitely something to be cautious about, look at and acknowledge, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's, you know, again, bringing it back to not forgetting about the older adults and checking in on how they're doing, because a lot of us were in our own head surviving, you know, and now the older adults, we can't forget about them needing to adjust and get back and get the help they need if they didn't weather the storm well.
Okay. All right. And I want to get to that in just a second. There's one more thing I want to ask you about. We talked a little bit about the confusion with some of the public health messaging about the pandemic itself and it's coming and going. there was also a political controversy around some of the mitigation efforts, mask use and social distancing and later vaccines. Now, older people tended to get vaccinated at higher rates, but I'm curious as to whether that all of the discussion, there was a lot of different disinformation about some of the mitigation efforts. I wonder if that also helped add to the confusion that some people felt.
For sure. I mean, whenever you're getting a mixed message from the people in charge, it's something that you have to deal with. It's something you have to take in the information, navigate it, and apply it to yourself and figure out what the best decision is for you. And so older adults had that same challenge, you know, and then they may have also been getting the recommendation or the opinions of their family members or their adult children of what they should or shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot. So just like all of us, I think older adults went through that same thing.
Right. Yeah, I can certainly relate to the concerns from adult children. they are some of the most cautious people when it comes to their parents. So
understood. And, you know, then that dynamic turns where they start telling you what to do instead of you telling them what to do. And you're like, when did this happen?
Exactly. OK, well, then that brings us to I think one of the most important parts of this discussion, that is, what should family and friends do? What are the things they should be looking for? How should they distinguish, as you say, between, you know, the sort of ordinary cognitive shortfalls that an older person may have and something that's really dangerous in terms of a mental behavioral health issue? What should they be looking for? And then what should they do if they suspect or come to believe that's someone they love or care about is in trouble?
Yeah. This is such an important thing to talk about. And the key is talking. That's the thing to do first, is to talk with your loved ones about how they're feeling. Don't be afraid to have that discussion. Don't forget to have that discussion with the older adults in your life and ask them, share your own feelings and experiences to kind of open the door to them sharing what they're feeling and what their stress level was. And then listen and look for signs of major change. So things like cognition or physical health that don't seem right or seem to be a large change, something to check out. That might mean going to the medical doctors first, and that's fine. Signs of depression can mimic and look like what some people stereotypically think of as old age. So that includes sleep disturbance, appetite changes, low motivation, kind of a lack of will, a lack of oomph, right? Mm. Fatigue. Negative thinking, negative talking, feeling kind of hopeless, not really wanting to do much. Now, those things can align with not feeling well, can align with real medical issues, can align with just kind of not wanting to do much. But there's a degree where it can become clinically significant. It's if it inhibits you from engaging in daily life, from taking your medicine, from going to your doctors, from eating enough, from sleeping enough, or, you know, moving your body around. These are the kinds of things you want to look for. So I would not take anything for granted. If you have any question in your mind, if an older adult in your life is doing well or not, encourage them, talk to them, encourage them to go talk to, if it's their medical doctor first, because that's who they know and trust, go there first. Those are usually the first individuals to screen and see behavioral health issues. We here at Baker Street are really proud to have started this geriatric line of service. Really, it's just treating older adults, caregivers. We accept Medicare, so there's access to that service for psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. And it is out there. It's available via telehealth, in office, and it is as effective for older adults. Psychotherapy is as effective of older adults, studies show it, as it is for any other cohort of individuals. So sometimes people have a bias that, oh, they just are who they are. They're old and grumpy, or they're just kind of losing it. And it is what it is. That's who they are. Well, no, nobody should feel lousy all the time. That's not good, right? And so older adults can really respond to treatment. And that's what we're here for. And what I'm passionate about and Baker Street is passionate about now being able to provide for the community.
Okay. Is there a particular approach or strategy that folks can use to broach this subject? First of all, mom, dad, you know, I really think you need some help. How do you just encourage them to trust the to go to see the medical professional they trust the most, or do you come up with suggestions? Like, for example, I saw this program about Baker Street. Here's a phone number, you know, or would you like me to call them? Or, I mean, how involved should folks be in that kind of process?
I think it's individualized. I would love to be able to give you a stock answer, but I really think it's the individual family. Mm-hmm. But I think you should consider all of those things. You can consider, you should consider what, you know, knowing your loved one, what works for them and what doesn't. Some older adults, they want to maintain their own control and autonomy. Of course, right? So going in and saying, you're doing this and I'm taking you and I'm arranging it all for you without them being involved is not respectful or validating of them as their own individual autonomous person. Now, there are other people that will agree and say, yeah, I do need the help and be so relieved that you'll take care of it for them. Okay. So I really feel like you got to gauge that. I think the crux of the conversation has to be to just value and validate how they're feeling. Sometimes we, as, and I speak for myself, we assume what someone's feeling.
Right.
We, you know, we sort of project or we kind of guide the ship. Let your loved one guide the ship. Hear them, value what they're saying, validate it, and then say, here are the options. What do you want to do? And see what they come up with. I have to say that I think in general, we underestimate older adults in terms of them knowing what they need.
Okay.
So I say, start there. And then if you need to give a nudge or a push, that's up to you as the family and work within what has worked before.
Okay. And well, I mean, what it's coming down to is something you said earlier about communication. I mean, you need to understand a baseline for what you're dealing with and then mm-hmm. be able to talk to the people you're concerned yeah. about. Okay.
Talking now, helps at the base of it. Okay. I'm sorry. At the base, talking helps.
Okay.
Talking will help any situation, okay. Even if it's uncomfortable.
All right. And as we all hope, or well, I don't know, I shouldn't say maybe not hope, but at some point, the pandemic is going to be over, maybe over now. It's not, we don't know. New Jersey just went through another mm-hmm. period where there was a lot of positive test results. But the feeling is that at a certain point, it's going to reach what public health people call an endemic phase.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's always going to be in the background. That seems to me might also itself create some anxiety because, well, it's always out there. Is there going to be a constant reassessing of whether whether it's safe to go to the grocery store, whether it's safe to go to church or synagogue? Mm-hmm. I mean, when it gets to that point, mm-hmm. how are people going to be able to cope with that? And what should they do?
I think it's becoming aware of if you have that kind of thinking where you are constantly assessing and worrying and wondering and how much that affects you. You know, that's the key. If that's going to be our reality, and I am not that kind of expert, so I can't say if it is or it isn't. I'm living it like everybody else. It's about understanding and taking stock of how do I respond to that? Does that make me very anxious? Does that stress me out every morning to know what I'm going to do or not do that day? Or do I have sort of my own level of, okay, here are the markers for me where I'm going to start to worry or my family is going to start to worry? I think that is going to be everybody's key to success here in coping with this is understanding yourself and recognizing it. Now, if you have a constant worry, if it is something that drains you, if it preoccupies you, if it inhibits you from being able to do things, that's something to maybe seek some professional help on, you know, because that is you kind of maybe the way I put it very plainly is kind of your nervous system overreacting. And there's a level of now when we're at an endemic where just like it's kind of a baseline. We want to have a baseline level of a response to all this information. And if you are still feeling very keyed up, if you still are feeling really activated, kind of like it was in the beginning, you might be having some anxiety that could be treated and could be helped with, you know, some psychotherapy and things like that.
Right. And folks should not be afraid or worried or feel a stigma about going
no.
and getting help. I mean, I've spoken to, again, some of your colleagues about that. And that's something that that they've tried very hard to overcome is this stigma. I need help to be able to acknowledge that.
I equate it and I talk to my clients about this, just like any kind of condition. If you have a sprained whatever, and the doctor says, you need to do physical therapy for a while and take this pain anti-inflammatory, you do it, right? And you get better and your muscles, you know, recuperate and you gain some strength and some new exercises and skills and you move on with your life. The one good thing that I have seen come out of this pandemic, it's good and bad, is that I'm amazed at how many regular old people, right? People that were coping and moving along with life and living life before the pandemic, the stress of the pandemic kind of push some people over the edge a little bit that otherwise would have coped just fine. And they're seeking the help. And that's the beauty of it. People, the stigma is not so bad that people aren't seeking that help. So you don't need to have a major mental health condition that's lifelong. And it doesn't mean you have a label and you're gonna be in therapy forever. No,
right.
Look at it just like a sprained something. I'm just having a difficult time getting over this hump, and let me go and get some professional help. That's different than, you know, turning to friends or family, which is wonderful, but sometimes it's just not enough.
Okay.
So I often talk about it in that analogy with folks. You know, if the doctor tells you to get a little PTOT, that's me. That's coming every week, doing some, you know, talking, some mental exercises, gaining some strengths and some tools, and then moving on with your life.
Okay. You said Baker Street does accept Medicare. They have five locations around in the state.
Yeah. I'd have to count. So Paramus, Closter, Cedar Grove, and Morristown. Those are our in-office locations. Okay. And we also offer virtual sessions.
Okay.
Well.
And for viewers who are interested, we will have contact information for Baker Health in the post that accompanies this video. Dr. Carrie Ditzel, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your time. I hope you come back and let's talk again about, because who knows where this is going at this point. It'd be interesting to get your views again.
I would love it. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again. And thank you all for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.